Christian Parenting.
Aloha, friends, and welcome to the Monica Swanson Podcast, powered by Christian Parenting. I am Monica Swanson, mom to four boys, wife to Dr. Dave, podcast host, and author of Boy Mom, Raising Amazing, and the newly released Becoming Homeschoolers. Here on the podcast, it is my goal to bring you practical advice and biblical wisdom for raising amazing kids and building strong families. You can always find show notes over at monicaswanson.com/podcast. I'm so glad you're here, and I hope you'll be encouraged. Hey friends, welcome back to the podcast and somehow welcome to the month of July. That is so crazy. We're about to hit 4th of July, so hope you are just having fun, being safe, and your summer is going so well. Today we are doing part two of just a little mini series touching on the topic that is on most of our minds as parents, that is kids and technology. I want to come alongside you and encourage you and help you and offer you some amazing experts on these topics. Hopefully you caught last week's interview with Joey Odom. It was powerful. His story was so relatable. And I think he had so much good stuff. So if you missed that one, be sure to go back, check it out. Today, we have Erin Lochner with us. Now, if you don't know Erin, she goes way back to the beginning of social media days, internet blogging. She had over a million followers that she walked away from to live a slower, simpler life with her family. So much respect there, but kind of blows my mind. She went on to do a whole lot of research, and today she is with us to talk about how we can borrow from the multi-billion dollar tech industry's playbook to, as she says, be more engaging than the algorithm. Does that sound interesting to you? Well, I love what Erin shares. She's pretty radical, but she wrote the book called The Opt-Out Family, and I think that you're going to be super inspired by her insights, all the research she's done, and her practical advice for all of us. So I can't wait to share that with you. Now, because we're talking about technology, I did open the doors to my mini course called Raising Tech Smart Kids. And guys, this is, there's a link to it over in show notes, but this is something that should be really helpful to you this summer as it covers all the things on parents' minds related to technology. I have an interview with Sissy Goff, author of Taming the Technology Monster. We offer a list of just guidelines for raising kids in this age of technology. We're talking about social media, about video game guidelines. It's a really packed mini course. It's only $25, and I really believe that everything in there will help you be intentional this summer with your kids, even making a game plan for the school year ahead. The resource list, as always, is packed. I'm so proud of my resource list. I do a lot of work to make those good. So go over to show notes where you're going to find a link to Raising Tech Smart Kids mini course. All right, friends, without further ado, let's jump in. Talk to Erin Lochner. I think you're going to love this, and you'll find show notes with links to everything over at monicaswanson.com/Erin-Lochner, and Lochner spelled L-O-E-C-H-N-E-R. And of course, you can find all the podcast show notes at monicaswanson.com/podcast. That might be easier. All right, hope you enjoy this conversation, and I'll have a few final words to say at the end. Hey, Erin, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me, Monica. I'm so excited to chat with you.
I have followed you for so long, so I am personally excited to get to ask you some questions and get to know you better and to share such an important message you have with my listeners. So before we dive in, can you just give a quick intro to who you are, where you are, about your family?
Yeah, of course. I live in the Midwest with my three kids. They are almost 12, 8, and 4. And we homeschool as well. And I am a former social media influencer who, we'll get into this, but walked away from a million followers to really slow things down and opt out and live a less tech heavy life.
Mm-hmm. Incredible. And I think about the time I started blogging, I was just reading your book, Chasing Slow, right? That was your last book that came out.
Yeah.
And I remember like, wow, I was so inspired by your writing and just loved your heart. And then that's about the time you were making your way out of the public light, right? Is that timeline about right?
Yeah, it's funny. I guess I didn't put this together, but the first book was sort of, you know, writing my way through what it's like to leave the American dream and leave that rat race. And I guess this book is kind of the same. It's about, you know, walking away from the online rat race, right? Mm-hmm. From the it's kind of the same message, just peeling back those layers to get back to something a little more rooted in reality, maybe in humanity, thoughtfulness, yep. All of that.
Yes, so good. But I just have to say, like, I admire it so much that you made that move. So many of us who are building an online presence would be like, a million followers and you walked away. Like, are you crazy? Can you just go back a little bit and tell us what that looked like? And I mean, you had to have a strong conviction to be courageous and make that move. Tell us what that looked like for you.
Yeah. You know, I wish I could say it was strategic and that was, there was just, you know, that one moment that I walked away and knew I would never come back. But honestly, I knew after the birth of my first daughter that if I continued influencing, if I continued, you know, building the platform, as we say, then I would just be parenting with my phone in my hand a lot more than I wanted to. Mm. And we know as homeschoolers that almost all of this gig is modeling, right? It's working on ourselves. It is really just praying through how can we really guide these children, which is essentially guiding ourselves, right? And so I wanted to try to do something a little differently. I wanted to know, certainly for myself, can I live this, you know, vibrant, passionate life without all of the excess and all of the social media and all of that that comes with it. But mostly I wanted to know, you know, my husband worked at Apple's ad agency. We're both very familiar with the algorithm. We knew that it was not a place we wanted our kids to go or to spend time in eventually. And yet that's where the world was headed. So I thought, gosh, if I'm expecting my children to grow up in a world where tech is, you know, kind of chosen for them, it seems, can we start now sort of developing these rhythms and habits so it is more possible for them to opt out when they choose, when they can make that decision? So it was kind of a twofold thing. Can I do it myself, but also can I show my kids that it can be done too? And the answer there is yes and yes. You know, it's available to us all. It takes some intention and some, a lot of it is in the book, but yes, it's possible. And I want to share the hope, not certainly as a standard and as an expectation that everyone needs to opt out and change their whole tech mindset, but for the people that want to and that think it's not possible, I would love to just say it is very possible. And that's who this book is for.
So good. Okay, so we're referring to the opt-out family, how to give your kids what technology can't. And we're going to talk more about that. But I'm still just like hanging out there on that process of leaving. And just, did you enjoy, like, was it hard or were you relieved? Like, because I think that as much as social media can be a grind and I have a love-hate relationship, I kind of enjoy it. So I think like choosing to walk away from that kind of a following would be hard for me. I'm just curious if you can expound on that a little bit. Was it hard for you or were you like, I am so over it and happy to leave?
No, of course. I mean, I think initially you're learning a new way to live. It was really challenging at first. It was. I would say, and I didn't do it on purpose. I just kind of stopped going to those places. I stopped going to Instagram. I stopped going to Twitter. I just stopped going. And so I think at the beginning, there was sort of like an itch, like something feels like it's missing. And then I think it truly doesn't take very long once you kind of untether yourself from that, to change that rhythm slightly and recognize, oh man, you know, I'll never know or be able to measure the opportunities lost, but I can absolutely see the fruits gained. And that's sort of where I hang my hat on. What is the abundance on the other side? What am I gaining over here instead? And let's continue moving in that direction. So I wouldn't say that it was all easy, but it was, I was convicted and it was, sure. I feel like the Lord really blessed me and showing me a different way.
Right. Because you were really, from the get-go of the internet, you were one of the early writers, right? Like how far back, what year did you start an online presence?
I mean, I can't remember a time as an adult when I didn't, 2001, maybe I had a Zynga account. I mean, just forever ago. And then, you know, I think once the web sort of began providing opportunities for monetization and for working with other brands, it always just came very naturally as the next step. So I think that, yeah, very early, I'm an internet old maid. I've been around for a while. Wow.
I love that story. It is just so cool. And again, like so much respect for you being able to make that choice, even though you were so far into it and such a natural at it and such a good writer. Did you think you were done even writing books, or did you know that you would probably continue to write? Because it is clearly something you're so gifted at.
Thank you for saying that. You know, it's funny. I thought there's no way a publisher would let me publish a book if I don't have a social media presence, mm-hmm. because I think that's what we tell ourselves. And I think that's true for a lot of cases, that there are some standards in place where there's a platform that's desired. But I became really convicted in sort of the world of publishing that I was recognizing that the people that had the stories to share were too busy living the stories to be able to Instagram about it, you know? And so I just thought, what a world of writing that we're missing out on. And just by sort of writing off the people that don't have the point. And I understand there's a bottom line to take care of, you know, I'm not a publisher, so I can say that freely. But I also think I did think I would have to give up my writing career. I wanted that to not be the case. Mm-hmm. What I did instead was I focused a lot on ghostwriting. So I told other people's stories instead of my own. And I just recognized that I love to write. It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. I love to tell worthy stories and tell good stories. And it's a practice that I will do no matter what, mm-hmm. whether or not anyone's reading it. So I pivoted to ghostwriting for a long time. And then I'm just very grateful to my publisher for taking a chance on this and for saying, let's try it a different way. Let's try to publish a book without social media and see what happens. And we're doing it. We're doing it grassroots style. And thank you to you for having us just to share this message.
Oh, absolutely. So tell us what led to this book. What was kind of the process from where you were to now putting this book out?
You know, honestly, at the time of writing this book, the narrative was very much, you know, why would you want to opt out of tech? Why is that so important? You know, what do you have against social media and what do you have against all? I think for a long time, we really focused on digital well-being. We focused on balance. We focused on mindfulness and all of those things that are great things to focus on. And yet I wanted to know, where's the book for the people that just don't want to deal with this at all? Where's the book for the people who recognize it is harder to parent with a phone, with a child that has a phone than it is to not? And I wanted that book. And it's a bold statement. And I recognize that we don't live in a world that I think we like to say that we accept nuance, but I think sometimes we don't very well. And so I just kind of wanted to explore what that was. And that's where the book began. And honestly, just in the course of writing this, there has been so much more research and so much more support surrounding the idea that maybe phone-free for kids is a sustainable option, and maybe it's not so crazy after all. And so I find that just even in these conversations, we have absolutely shifted the narrative from why to how. We want to know, how do we do this? We absolutely recognize as parents, there's a benefit to doing this a different way, but how do we go about it?
Yes. Oh, that is the million-dollar question. And that's what I want to talk more about. But you did a lot of research. I know. I love that throughout this book, so much research. Tell us a little bit. You seem to really understand this algorithm. You already mentioned that. What about the algorithm would you say surprised you, or did you find most alarming? And maybe before you do that, for anyone listening who's like, I don't even know that term. Like I throw that word algorithm out there. Tell us, what is an algorithm and why we should know about it?
Yeah. And I mean, an algorithm, one of the best definitions in my research for this book was given to me by a programmer. And he just said, it's a recipe. It's a series of steps that gets you to a certain goal. And I remember asking him, well, whose goal? And he said, that's the $1 million question, right? Like that's mm-hmm. what you need to know is that these algorithms are geared toward the tech company's goal, right? They want to keep you on your device as long as possible. That's where the money is. And so we sort of, as a family, started loosely toying around this phrase, be more engaging than the algorithm. Mm-hmm. That was our family motto. Wow. Because we recognize it's not enough to say no to devices. We have to say yes to something better. And overwhelmingly in my research, I mean, I will just paint the wide stroke and say that the algorithm is—it's worse than I thought. There are lots of different algorithms. It's not like there's just one, but overwhelmingly, it became clear that once you sort of hop on the treadmill of some of these algorithms, you're no longer in control of where you're heading. You're not privy to the knowledge of what comes next or what content you will be served next, or even what terms and conditions are changing in these platforms without your knowledge. It is wild how little we are kind of allowed to know as users of these platforms. And so without that transparency, without that accountability, we really are at the mercy of the company and of the bottom line. And I wasn't comfortable with that. So that's where all the research came in. I wanted to know, okay, so obviously phones are very engaging. If they were all bad, we wouldn't be using them. And so I wanted to know, what is it about these devices, what it is about these platforms that make us so engaged and so wrapped up in them? And I wanted to know, you know, how does a Minecraft designer create something that is so challenging and so rewarding, but not at all demotivating? And I wanted to know how we as parents can do that better. I wanted to know, how does TikTok create this feeling of fun and party central and new and delightful all the time? And how can we as parents do that better? I had just had all these questions. So that was really my goal, is how can we as parents be more engaging than the algorithm? And I was a bit skeptical if we could kind of go toe-to-toe with the tech companies, but I'm thrilled to report the parents can do it better. We have the upper hand against technology. We really, really do. And I want all parents to recognize that by living in under the roof with our children and by being present with them and looking them in the eyes and being able to know them so well. We know their favorite dessert at age 4. We know what they love, what they don't love. We know what embarrasses them. We have so much more data at our fingertips than TikTok will ever have. And that is what I want parents to know about when it comes to the algorithm. We do have the upper hand.
Wow. That is so hope-filled. Maybe we can, like, can you just share a few recommendations maybe for those early years? What are some things, you know, you see kids at the grocery store sitting on an iPad, watching they don't even notice. They don't even know where they are. They are just glued to a screen. Let's start in the early years. Do you have just some suggestions? Like, what are some things parents can do?
Yes. There are so many. One of the things I was the most inspired by with TikTok particularly is, and I'm saying this as someone, obviously I do not have a TikTok account. I'm not on social media personally, but overwhelmingly the children and the teens that I spoke with talked about what a wonderful place that was for them. Now I'm saying that knowing that it's not a wonderful destination for them, but I understand that it's wonderful in the moment for them. Mm-hmm. I was very interested in, I spoke with some of their programmers and they had removed all starting cues completely. So, you know, when you go into the app of TikTok, you are met with automatic, you don't have to push a button. There's no friction. Mm-hmm. There's no resistance. You're just met with people dancing, people having fun, videos that personify your interests. And mm-hmm. I thought, okay, what is a way that we can do that as parents, right? How can we sort of cut down on that friction and that barrier and those starting cues, right? We all know when a child is very young, they'll walk around kind of listless, age 3, 4, 5, and say like, I'm bored, right?
Yeah.
And I think our temptation is to kind of become a cruise director and plan all of these activities and things. And just have a coffee table or some sort of surface that is designated for exploration. Mm-hmm. And it could be a different thing whenever. I have a friend that put a different thing. She didn't use her microwave. And so she would put a different thing in the microwave for her kid to open, like it was a spaceship capsule or something.
Right.
Like today there's a tub of Play-Doh and tomorrow there might be a favorite stuffed animal that was left behind somewhere and now has been recovered or whatever. But just having a designated space in your home for surprise, mm-hmm. for that element of surprise. And so mm-hmm. there is no sort of starting cue of, hey, do you want to make muffins with me? The muffins are on the surface. You know, the muffin ingredients are already there. The party is already happening. The child knows they're invited. Mm-hmm. Just belly up and get to work and have some fun. So, mm-hmm. and it can be anything. It's not anything that has to be pre-planned. You know, it could be pine cones from outside and some clay, or maybe just a couple sheets and some markers out on the coffee table. Just having something engaging for them to stumble upon and discover on their own. There's a lot of agency and autonomy in that. And that's why TikTok is so successful. They're not telling you what to do. You feel like you are stumbling upon this thing in an outcome-free environment. And that's very engaging for a child. That's very engaging for anyone. So the book is full of little tips like that, but just borrowing a couple of those early childhood development things. I found it very interesting how many of technology's sort of stickier strategies are really rooted in early childhood development.
They're just
named something different, you know?
Exactly. No, I love that because I think that most of us wouldn't recognize that. Like even if we looked at TikTok, we wouldn't recognize, oh, there's no starting cues. But because you did the research, now we can borrow from that and go, oh, how can I create an environment where we don't need starting cues? Is this something that we are moving in the direction where most people want some help with this? Or would you say there's people still resisting and trying to slow the movement of opting out, other than the big tech companies?
Honestly, I thought there would be resistance, and I am so surprised by how even parents who have already maybe given their child a device and are regretful about that decision. I was speaking at my church a couple months ago about this topic, and I find that I'm just always sounding the alarm and banging the drum, and so I'm the easy ask, right? Aaron will talk about technology anytime, and yet a woman stood up in the middle of the panel and said, you guys have to listen up because she's exactly right. I gave my child a device. This is what happened next. I need anybody who hasn't made that decision yet to make a different decision and think really profoundly and deeply before you do that. And I was very struck by that because I think it takes a lot when we acknowledge that we could have done something better. And I think we're all sort of, I think we really are, generally speaking, doing the best we can with the the capacity that we're given and with the limitations that we're given. And now we have the gift of research. And so now it's go time. And now we can say, okay, we have an overwhelming amount of research here. What are we going to do differently? And I would say just with the gift of that alone, with the Surgeon General's warning, with the, you know, we are now at a place where one of the statistics that is in my book is 71% of parents believe that smartphones do more harm than good in their child's life. And so I kind of feel like, you know, I want to catch all those people before they adapt and say like, you can do it a different way. It's possible. And you have to do it together. You know, we really do need to do it together to make this change and make this opting out possible. But it is possible.
To all of my homeschooling friends and those of you who are becoming homeschoolers, I'm excited to tell you about the math and science curriculum that all of my boys have used and loved. Head over to diveintomath.com to check out Shorman Math and Dive Science curriculums. Dr. Shorman is a good friend of ours, and he does such a great job of offering a biblical and historical foundation in all of his classes, teaching the why of learning math. He brings biblical concepts into everything, and my boys have been inspired by Dr. Shorman on so many levels. Now, the diveintomath.com website offers self-paced courses and state-of-the-art e-learning system featuring expert video instruction, interactive assignments with auto-grading and grade recording, video solutions, and Q&A support with Dr. Shorman himself. Also, important to note, Shorman Algebra 1 and 2 teaches every concept on the PSAT, SAT, and ACT with over 200 practice questions. Guys, this is what your kids need to prepare for all of these standardized tests. Okay, so my boys love that Dr. Shorman taught short lessons and it was a four-day school week, and yet he packed in so much. They learned a ton and it was efficient so they could get on with doing all the other fun stuff they want to do. All right, so head over to diveintomath.com. Check out the math and science curriculums offered there. I think you're going to love them. Warmer, sunnier days are calling, and no one feels like standing over a hot stove making dinner on a hot summer night. So you can fuel up for your summer evenings with Factor's no prep, no mess meals. Factor's fresh, never frozen meals are dietitian approved and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. That's right, 2 minutes. So no matter how busy you are, you'll always have time to enjoy nutritious, great tasting meals. With 35 different meals and more than 60 add-ons to choose from every week, you'll always have new flavors to explore. So make your day delicious. From breakfast to dessert, stay fueled with easy, nutritious options from Factor. Treat yourself to restaurant quality meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, and blackened salmon. Now, you can head over to factormeals.com/Swanson50 and use code Swanson50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month. That's code Swanson50 at Factor. Now go enjoy your people and your summertime and less cooking time. Go check out factor.com/Swanson50 and let me know how you like it. Yes. And I do think that there's a lot of people who have moved in the direction of already giving their kids phones or too much freedom. And now they're trying to figure out how to backpedal. Do you have any suggestions for ways to communicate with your kid if you want to own it and just humble yourself and say, I probably made some decisions without doing my research, without knowing enough. How can we then take some steps back?
Yeah, I love that question because there's always a way to course correct, always. And we have to count the cost involved in that. One of the questions I will ask parents a lot of times is I think technology is such a loaded topic and we do carry a lot of regret and a lot of sort of guilt and shame around it. Mm-hmm. So I kind of like to depersonalize the topic a little bit and just say, okay, if you were to give your 11-year-old or 13-year-old, whatever, a family pet, say they've been begging for a dog, you say yes to the dog, but then that dog is maybe keeping them up all night, is perhaps making them more anxious. Maybe when they're out on walks, it's not going down the path you want them to go. You know, maybe their best friend is allergic or can't engage with the dog. And so then they've lost a bit of their community in real life. Running these scenarios and asking yourself, what would you do in that case? Would you rehome the dog? Would you maybe take ownership over the dog and have a shared ownership experience? Would you say all together, like, or would you let them figure it out on their own? You know, every parent's going to have a different response to that. And the only wrong answer is not to question it at all. Yes. And so I just encourage parents to just sort of run that litmus test. Wow. And then the other thing I would suggest is almost over communicate. You know, I have a friend that says, if you're not, if your kids aren't rolling their eyes yet, then you're not saying it enough. And so we talk a lot about technology and keeping it in its rightful place as a family. And one of the parents that I spoke with for this book, I was really inspired by her method of having a suggestion box on the kitchen counter, just like Meta. You know, Meta has a way to anonymously report things that they see online and content that might be disturbing or anything of the sort. And so she has just sort of an anonymous suggestion box where, what did you see online this week? What are you uncomfortable with? What questions do you have surrounding that? It's all anonymous. And then they go through it, you know, fairly periodically, and they talk about what's inside. Yeah. And that is just as important. I think that's a really great digital literacy tool to use.
Oh, that is so cool. I love that idea. And again, you do have so many other ideas. You clearly talked to a lot of people as you wrote this book. One of the questions I get from a lot of my book readers and podcast listeners is, do I have any suggestions? So I'm turning to you as the expert here, as people do, I know. But for the 12-year-old, 14-year-old maybe, who doesn't have a cell phone and all their friends do, and they might even be okay with it on a good day, but they're like, Mom, I'm the only one. Do you have like a good script? What can we tell those kids to help them understand? Because we see it from our vantage point. They see it from a 12 or 14 or even older kids' point of view. How can we help communicate?
I know. Well, I can just say what I say to my 12-year-old. Yeah. He's right there with all of you guys. And I just say, I'm sorry, it is not fair. It is not fair that they live in a world where, you know, we have encouraged them to kind of dip out of this world and dip into a different world. And we have really placed a very high value on progress, you know, sort of at the feet of these children. And it's not fair and it's not right. And I think coming from a place of empathy with our own daughter has really helped. You know, we talk about everything, you know, but we do unpack some of those whys. I think on the surface, it does. Something that she said to me was very interesting. She said, I don't actually want a phone. There's no part of me that wants a phone. Mm-hmm. I just want a friend. And my friends, she has seen them change as they have gotten phones. Yeah. And she'll say, you know, they're a phone person now. And they don't play as much, or there's not, you know, we don't have all that downtime. They're in a theater group. And so, you know, whenever there's sort of an in-between scene change, people will just pop onto their phone. And all I can say is I know that happens to us all the time at dinner with other people, and it doesn't make it okay. It doesn't make it any easier. Mm-hmm. And then we take them out for ice cream. You know, it's it's the idea of being more engaging and recognizing that this is their battle. This is such a hard time to be a kid. And as hard as we think it is to parent, it is a million times harder to be a kid right now. And commending them for whatever convictions they are facing, and commending them for going a different way. A lot of time, I think proactively things that we can do as parents is reading a lot of books about kids that went against the grain. Caddy Woodlawn was a really great example for us. And just kids or families that might just be living a bit differently, swimming upstream, reading those, celebrating those mindsets. It is okay to be different. My pastor's always saying, if you're not doing something differently, you're probably doing it wrong. You know, like our lives are going to look a little countercultural, and that's okay. And then also I would just say sort of drawing attention to the positives of a tech-free experience. I had a mom whose son had the best jump shot on the basketball team only because when he would stay after hours and practice at the gym, the other kids were home playing video games. And so she often drew attention to that and said, hey, this is a real benefit that you're experiencing because we live this way. Yes. So I think those are just a handful of things we can do. And it's not easy. I get it. And I do feel for the kids. It's a hard, hard time.
No, I think that's so helpful. And I think that compassion is so important. And also just sharing as they grow up some of the research and information. I think kids really do respond well when they know the why behind it. Mm-hmm. And then their eyes are kind of open. And like you said, your daughter now can look at friends and see how it is actually impacting them. And if we can be patient, they will see, oh, and now suddenly these same kids are struggling with anxiety and depression and whatever else. And I know that my son talks about how, you know, he golfs and how the kids talk about video games. He's like, they're up like all night. And I'm like, well, now you have a leg up on them because you're rested when they're not. And yes, and I know that my third son, we waited the longest to give him a smartphone, and he had a flip phone when he needed to communicate with us through his teenage years. And it became somewhat of a novelty where it was kind of like the cool thing that he had the only flip phone of all of his friends. And he kind of took some pride in that. So I think it took some time to get there, but that was a fun option and fun way to, you know, go through his teenage years, because that was really all he needed. Well, I guess one question somebody out there has before we wrap up, because you're talking about opting out, and maybe you can define, like, how extreme are you recommending? And is there somewhere in the middle? Can somebody have technology, give their kids use of technology, but just find a better way to use it? Maybe speak into that person who's like, I don't know if I'm ready to go all the way there, but I'm ready to make some steps.
Yes, yes. And I'm glad you brought that up, because opting out is not an all or nothing thing. There are many, many ways to opt out. And truly, when I think about the phrasing opt out, I think a lot of just, you know, Meta's motto is move fast and break things. That's not where we want to be as parents. You know, like, I think that that certainly has a time and a place for the entrepreneur, but for us as parents leading families, our job is to move slow and mend things. Can we, when faced with a decision of whether or not to adapt to more technology or less or the same, can we just pause and can we slowly make a decision that while recognizing that it's often what happens after the decision is made that will sort of determine the course of action. So I spoke with a Silicon Valley venture capitalist about first order thinking and second order thinking. And she was talking about how anytime they're prioritizing a decision, they have to go into second order thinking. So it's not, you know, is my child ready for a phone or not? It is, okay, what happens after I give them a phone, right? Play it out. Play out some of those limitations and boundaries. And so, you know, for us, opting out is not just, you know, living in the middle of Wyoming on a goat farm. It's just, it is the idea that, you know, when we're faced with the option of, do we want facial recognition at our child's summer camp, right? If our kid is going away to church camp and we get that notification that says, you can see exactly what they're experiencing at all times, that's not something that I want. I don't want her followed around with a camera, and I don't want myself to experience what she should be experiencing independently. I want to regroup and hear all about it when she gets home in person over cocoa and have a blast, but I don't need to real-time experience that alongside of her. So, that's where we as parents can decide, do we want to opt in, recognizing that we are going to opt all the way in at the mercy of the tech company, or do we want to opt out? Right. And so that's really what this is. And for us, you know, a lot of that is the long-term strategy of, we will have a landline, right? We want you to be able to talk with your friends so they can call anytime. I always tell my friends and their kids' kids that I'm much better at answering my phone than answering my door than answering the phone. So open door policy, come on over. You don't have to text ahead of time. Just come. Wow. And so that's a big part of it, is making sure they have that community that's solid so you can be kind of the low-tech hangout. But our other strategy in being an opt-out family is just that we're not going to be providing them their first phone. Their phone, you know, when they start driving, they will have a track phone or a flip phone. They will have access to something to use in emergency scenario if they feel that that's what they're comfortable with and they need. But they will, you know, they get to decide what their first phone is going to be. If they want to buy the iPhone when they can sort of handle that responsibility and the finances involved, then they can buy their first phone. That's not what I'm going to invest in as their parent. And I also recognize that they're going to need to make those decisions once they leave the house anyway. So my goal is that we will have shown them a different way to live. They can weigh all of their options. They can come up with all of the people they know and have a wide variety of examples to live from, and they can choose what works for them.
I love that. And that's so inspiring. So thank you for sharing that. Before we wrap up, one thing I wanted to touch on, because you mentioned the facial recognition, your daughter was going to summer camp, you talk about in the book, and how you received a letter that was, you know, asking you to agree to, I think, her being followed, and, you know, just cameras that would be at the camp with facial recognition. And it occurred to me how often things like that might come in the mail, or things that come across us as parents. And it's just easier to say, yes, okay, if everyone else is doing it, I guess that's just the world we live in. But so much of this is also about us slowing down and taking those steps that may be inconvenient to opt out, right? So maybe you can just speak to that real quick before we close.
Oh, it does. And it's not convenient. You know, mm-hmm. I think that harder doesn't, you know, mean that it's wrong. And I think easier doesn't mean that it's better. And mm-hmm. I think the only encouragement I can offer there is that generally opting in is far more inconvenient than not. I think about all those times mm-hmm. that, you know, we'll try to go faster and do something, right? This just, I'm not perfect at this. This just happened. Daughter needed a swimsuit. She had outgrown her other one. And so I went online to buy a replacement swimsuit. Mm-hmm. Well, it doesn't fit. So now I'm going to spend the time to mm-hmm. make the online return mm-hmm. and then find the replacement for the replacement that doesn't fit. Mm-hmm. And so it's sort of playing out the idea that almost always the slow way is kind of the good way. It's just slowing down enough to do things with intention. I think a lot of the quote that's, you know, we're moving, it's Rebecca Solnit, but a lot of times we are moving far past the speed of thought, which means we're moving past the speed of thoughtfulness. That really hits home, I think, in a lot of areas when we start to add these technological conveniences. You know, it's easier to furnish a home online, but it's easier to neglect a home. It's easier to make money. It's easier to spend money. I think there's just a pro and con to all of it. And we have to consider those costs.
That's super good. And you already mentioned it, but I know my husband has said, you know, before you give your child a phone, you do have to think about how much more parenting is going to be required now just by simply giving them that phone. There's so much, the stakes are so much higher. If you want to parent well, your job is about to increase tenfold just because they have that device. So do you really want more work as a parent?
Yes. So. I'm glad you said that because yes, I feel like I don't have the mercy of saying that because I've never experienced it, but that is what I see other parents dealing mm-hmm. with is the amount of monitoring and managing rather than mentoring. You know, we want to be mentoring and we're not, we're just sort of their content moderator at all times. Yes.
And the reality is, sadly, most of the time people don't have the time and the energy to do that tenfold parenting. And so then they let things go, which then opens the door to so much potential damage and difficult things. So, wow. Well done on an excellent book. Great writing. So easy to read and yet really, really packed with tons of research and examples and practical help. I'm all about the practical. I want to, you know, not just give people fluffy ideas, but like, what can we really do about this? So where can people find you? You do have a website, right?
I do. I know.
I have seen that.
I firmly believe in email addresses. I know. Wouldn't that be funny if I said, find me on Instagram? yes, our website is optoutfamily.com. And honestly, the only reason that exists is just so people can get any information. Everything's free. Just get whatever information that you need. We have scripts on there for talking about sort of rallying the troops around you and getting some sort of opt-out circle happening so you're not doing it alone. Mm-hmm. Talking to parents, talking to coaches, talking to school teachers, any of that. So many resources. But again, like, honestly, if there's not a resource on there that you need, I want to hear so we can make it for you. So use the site and email anytime.
All right. And someday I'm going to knock on your door and sit down for a cup of tea.
Do it. Come over. Yeah.
I'm like, oh, I love that open door policy. So fun.
Yeah.
Super cool. Okay. Well, Erin, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for the hard work you put into this and can't wait to get it in everyone's hands. So
thank you. Thank you for having me.
You bet. Aloha. Okay, friends, I hope you enjoyed that conversation. And once again, if you missed last week's conversation with Joey Odom, I encourage you to go back and check that one out. And also remember, there's a link to the Raising Tech Smart Kids mini course over in show notes. And show notes today are found at monicaswanson.com/Erin-Lochner. And that's spelled LOECHNER. And you can find links to all the different podcast episodes at monicaswanson.com/podcast. All right, guys, stay safe this weekend. Have a wonderful 4th of July. God bless you. And until next time, aloha. Thank you.
To the teachers' assistants and support staff who see potential in every child, Grand Canyon University recognizes you. We created the National Center for Teacher Preparation at GCU, along with a generous scholarship so you can become a licensed teacher with paid benefits. Over 100 GCU alumni have been recognized award recipients, including Superintendent, Administrator, and Teacher of the Year. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu/parapro.